Welcome to VFN TV and the daily VFN radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T, light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
I want to give a special shout out to my mom today. She gave me this book when I was in college. And like every good mother who's contending for their child, please read, you know, get this in you. And she gave me this book, and it really helped me tremendously. I wasn't too much into reading back then, but I made it through this book. And what James Dobson writes in it, Steve, it's really, I mean, just awesome. He talks about the most important decade of anyone's life. And so you think, well, is it my 30s, my 20s? Mm-hmm. You know, is it my 40s? You know, what's the most important decade? And he mentions in the book that the most important decade of your life is from age 16 to 26.
Wow.
And I thought that was so interesting. And the reason behind it is because, you know, those are your most formative years. It's the time where you're growing up, but it's also the time where you're going to be making some serious decisions in your life, decisions in terms of education, decision in terms of careers, decisions economically, decisions involving maybe a future spouse, relationships, and how you choose. How you choose during this period of your life, whether you choose in a good way or whether you choose in a bad way, will affect you for the rest of your life.
Yes, they will.
And so, listen, you want to get some wisdom. You want to get some wisdom. You want to choose correctly. And I highly recommend that you get this into the hands of a graduate, of a young person. Really, anybody should read this book. I think it's great, great wisdom. But some of the things that Dr. Dobson says, that it's very easy to get off trail into the ditch in the morning of our lives. He says no one travels down the river of life without encountering turbulence. And so it's important to be able to begin to investigate what are the things that are important. What are my values? How to discover those things. And so many people's lives have been shipwrecked at an early age just because they didn't apply wisdom. They didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal. And guess what? Mm-hmm. It turned out to be a big deal. And you don't want to casually go through life, but you want to go through life with intention. You want to go through life with purpose. You just don't want to be voyeuristic. It's not virtual reality. This is for real, you know, and you want to choose the right way.
One of the things that has always encouraged me, as you're saying about that, is, you know, we said, when you look in the book of Proverbs, it says, of all things, get wisdom, get understanding.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's like people think that, you know, it's only going to come, you know, it's like someone who's graduating high school, they've gone through all the testings and everything. It's just like, imagine.
No, they've just begun.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. It's just like, you think you're done. It's just like, we're just beginning that journey of when we can grow our most. Because when I look back on that time of my life, I made many mistakes.
No.
And it's just like, oh yes.
You?
Not enough time right now. But it's just like, that is those moments when we're able to learn the most. So if there's someone who's lived through that, who has gone through that, those testings in their life, and they're saying, these are those most important years, it's like, how different would we be able to live that decade and know the fact of, okay, this is going to ripple effect to my 50s.
Absolutely.
The rest of my life.
Absolutely. Listen, you can borrow the experience.
Yes.
It's better to borrow it than to have to buy them. You know, there's certain experiences in life that you will have to buy all by yourself. Believe me, you will have to. No one can help you with that. But there are so many other experiences that you can borrow from others. You can learn from their mistakes. You can learn from their victories. And you can apply this wisdom and move more rapidly. And so, again, you know, I think about Lauren. I think about a lot of the graduates right now and what they're getting ready to face. And, you know, the world has a depiction of what they think success is and what they think it should be. And you need to, you know, settle this in your heart, whether you just graduated or you're 80 years old, right? You need to determine in your heart, what is success? You know, you need to see God about that.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely not what the world paints it out to be. Today, the world measures success in money. Today, the world measures success in possessions and things. Grown adults, believe it or not, grown adults still talk about the cars they drive, the houses they build. Like, it doesn't matter.
At some point, we got to get past material wealth.
Yeah. It's not about the toys and the things and the achievements, mm-hmm. even the trips, right? At the end of the day, what is your life going to count? What is success? And I tell you, for the believer, for the Christian, success is living the God life, you know? It's to do the things that please the Father. That's the epitome of enjoying life. That's, you want to know the highest pinnacle, the epic moment of life? Is when you realize that, one, you're not here on earth by accident, mm-hmm. that you are part of God's plan. Two, that God, the creator and the manager of the universe, has a plan for you, perfectly designed for you, and it's good plans in store. And three, that your life, that the small amount of time that we're here on earth, that you can actually bring pleasure and joy to God by living for him. And get this, God invites you into his plans and partners with you. I mean, talk about living the good life, the exciting life. The good life begins all with the God life. And I want to encourage you, whether you've graduated this week, last month, this year, or you've graduated 30, 40 years ago, listen, the best life you can have is by choosing right now. If you don't like the way it's been going, you can look back and say, you know what? I can change.
Today's the first day for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Make a change.
You can change. You can cry out to God and say, God, I don't even know what that was, mm-hmm. but I know I don't want that in my life anymore. And that I can make a change. I can make a turn for you and I can begin to experiencing the good life in God. And I can start beginning to do the things that bring pleasure to your heart and you know, blessing to the world.
We'll be right back.
If you would drive through this area, you would see the devastation. It's just crazy the amount of devastation. House is totally gone. Apartment complex behind me here. People still don't have electric water. We're bringing them food. Yesterday I brought about 200 meals out here to them yesterday, and we came back tonight to give them dinner. When I saw Operation Blessing, I seen exactly what they were doing, how they were setting up the organization. They were so organized. They came in with the food trailers. They had everything set in place to know that they need to get the management of it out there so they can control a lot of the volunteer work. So it goes a lot smoother by having Operation Blessing involved, and they get involved with different churches. So anything anybody can do to help Operation Blessing, they're amazing people, the people that are running this show, and they do great work. And it's an amazing thing to watch and see. It's actually a blessing to sit back and observe the love and compassion, because that's the biggest thing that you see when you're here. You get all the gratefulness from the people, but you get to see the love and compassion. Now, if you can't make it here, there's other ways you can help and serve also these people that are in such need right now, by going to OB.org and partnering with them so that they can get supplies to bring out here, because believe me, the semi trucks are rolling in. I saw probably 10 of them today. And they'll utilize that to the best abilities for these people out here, because they are truly, truly in need.
I love to see crowds burn, but I know I can shape history if I can find just one. Anybody can burn in a crowd. I want to find someone that will burn by themselves.
In 2014, a complete copy of a newly discovered first printed edition of the Pentateuch was auctioned at Christie's in Paris for
sold
$2 million.
An edition of the Pentateuch considered even more rare than copies of the Gutenberg Bible.
This first edition of the first five books of the Bible, the Torah in Hebrew, was printed in Bologna, Italy in 1482 and includes the Targum Onkelos, an Aramaic paraphrase and commentary.
It's also the first Hebrew book printed with cantillation signs and vowel points, special marks that ensure correct pronunciation and guide the ritual chanting of the Hebrew Bible in the synagogue.
One of only 28 copies known to exist on vellum and considered the most important book in the history of Hebrew printing and publishing.
Engage with the Bible, this book of all books.
Brought to you by Museum of the Bible.
Welcome back to VFN TV with your host, Greg Lancaster.
We have a moment. I want to be able to share from Proverbs a short wisdom moment. Proverbs 27:17. It reads, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. That's Proverbs 27:17. As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Are there people in your life that just seem to be always rubbing you the wrong way? People that just, you think there just seems to be always this tension or this friction or something of that nature. You know, some people just think that look at it in one perspective. They say, listen, this is just a negative encounter. This is not good. But those that follow the Lord understand that this person is sharpening me. I am being sharpened for the master's use. What they mean for evil, God means it for good. He's sharpening me so I can be an exact instrument in the Lord's hand for his purposes. Listen, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. If you have no one in your life that challenges you, if you have no one in your life that just kind of rubs you the wrong way, and you kind of avoid all those incidences, what's going on? You're a pretty dull person. You really can't be used for much. If something comes up, you crumble. You didn't go through the process of understanding that the processes of God is the testing of your faith. It's going through something. It's believing and holding on. It's understanding that you got to be with people. I mean, there's actually people that say they're called to minister for God, but they just don't want to be with people. And I'm like, dude, you can't, or do that. You know, you can't, it's about people. Mm. Mm. And it's like, it's all about people. Jesus said, or John writes, he says, listen, you know, if you say you love God, but you don't love your brother, you're a liar. Mm-hmm. You got to hang around with those folks that God's going to use to rub you the wrong way. Because what they're doing is rubbing parts of you off that you didn't need in the first place.
That's right.
The only thing that shows up and responds are the parts of us that have not yet died. But you know what? If you get close enough and live your life right before God and abide with him and get around a few friends and that love God and even sometimes you're working with that don't, understand that you're going to be a sharp instrument in the hand of the Lord. You can be mm-hmm. used for surgical moves by the kingdom of God if, in fact, you understand Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another.
We'll be right back.
We were talking last time about children between birth and 2 years of age and how their parents can begin introducing them to the wonderful world of music. The most important era, however, occurs between 3 and 7, when 80% of a boy or girl's hearing development occurs. That's the time when parents should expose their kids systematically to an array of rhythm and song. Here are some ways of doing that. Record your child's primitive songs, then listen to them together on playback. Introduce a feel for rhythm by giving the youngster a pot and a stick or a spoon to pound. You might even want to form a small rhythm band consisting of neighborhood children or cousins within the family. Give one of them a triangle, another two sandpaper blocks, and another a bell. Then get yourself a set of earplugs and let them bang and scratch to their heart's content. They'll love it. Dancing is another important component of music appreciation. Encourage it. Demonstrate it. Then as the child gets a little older, attend band concerts and parades and recitals. And finally, begin giving formal music lessons when the child appears emotionally and physically ready to learn. For Mozart, that occurred at 3 years of age. For mere mortals, it'll be a few years later. Regardless of the timetable, be sure you introduce your children to this exciting world that they will enjoy for a lifetime.
You know, a lot of people want to abide with the Lord, but they just don't have a plan to do it. You can request that plan today at iabide.org.
Welcome back to VFN TV with your host, Greg Lancaster.
You know, what is standing in the gap? How significant is standing in the gap? When I think about the Moravian people, they were basically a remnant of, you know, God's folks, 24 of them, and they were rejected, you know, by the religion. The best thing that could ever happen to you is be rejected by religious captives who, you know, have fallen into the kingdoms of this world and are no longer walking in the kingdom of God, you know, because then, you know, it's not as confusing for you anymore. You know, you can read theology, you read the Bible, and you go, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Without a ruler.
And so, you know, with that, the... And so you had 24 people that just came together. Zinzendorf allowed them to be on their property, but they're basically on some, you know, like Israel was sitting in Goshen, just on somebody else's land. But these 24 people, you know, changed the world as we know it. They began to stand in the gap, and they affected the globe. Matter of fact, take a look at this right here, 318.
It began in 1727. A band of refugees united together to pray. Led by a German nobleman who preached a heart religion in contrast to the cold and intellectual emphasis of his day. 24 men and 24 women determined that the flame of prayer should burn at the heart of their community. They divided themselves to pray in succession around the clock. It lasted for 100 years. The Moravian prayer meeting propelled over 3,000 missionaries to the ends of the earth, some even selling themselves into slavery. They went with one anthem: may the lamb that was slain receive the reward of his suffering.
You think about that. You know, the big question is, you know, about standing in the gap. So often, because of our struggle with ourselves, is, am I willing to stand in the gap for others? Because a lot of people, you know, our struggle is thinking that, you know, I want to stand in the gap for America, for the church in America, so I have a better job, so I have a better community, so I have a better nation, versus, you know, to be able to live, to be able to pass to the next generation, you know. You know, and I guess the big thing is this: standing in the gap is, are we willing? Do we want to stand in the gap for the will of God, which could take, you know, one or two generations, like the Moravians? Or are we going to stand in the gap for only our generation? In other words, I want to see that fruit in this generation. I'm not willing to do the work of what takes place. And what I think about, you know, Dutch Sheets when he talks about that. John, talk to us about, you know, Dutch, we had on the program.
When we had that Sheets, he talked about an appeal to heaven and about the evergreen tree.
Remember, you're probably seeing the flag right now. This is the flag.
Right. And this is an agreement that was made with the Indians and some of the first settlers. And my understanding about the evergreen tree is that it takes 100 years to actually grow to its fruition. I mean, it doesn't just happen overnight.
It just doesn't happen. It, all of a sudden, yeah, it got to be.
So whoever plants one doesn't even really expect to see it in their generation. They're really planting that tree for the next
generation.
And if
you do, you got to need glasses. You got to feel like Braille or something.
Right.
Your eyes are
going
out by
that. Right. So the significance is that, are we willing to continue to invest everything we have for God, pray, walk the things out the
way. But John, the problem with that, it just seems selfless.
Imagine that. Isn't that the idea?
But we're not being taught that. We're not, no. There's no, we're actually, is that, that's almost like taught as something not of God.
Mm-hmm.
The things that are being taught is you pray about, you live for, and you, the scriptures that you find are things that give you stuff and it makes your life better.
That to confirm how religious you are, how close you are with God, because obviously he heard your prayer and there it is, it manifested.
Why the next generation has no shade because there are no trees.
No.
And the Moravians, you think they prayed for 100 years?
Mm.
I mean, 100 years. You know, we were walking out ourselves, a prayer community, and we're working on one day. I mean, we've been, how long has it been?
Five years.
And we've grown off the wisdom of that from International House of Prayer, Mike Bickle in Kansas City. And it's like, I mean, it's an amazing thing. And without that, you know, we wouldn't even be here because this birth, BFN TV birth on a prayer watch. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were on a prayer watch and God just spoke to me plain as day. And the one thing he's telling me, he says, there's a people and you got to get to them. Because there's a lot of religious people, but there's a people like the Moravians who want God, who understand that you just lay down your life, that you're just living for their cause. To be a missionary today, people just like, they make it like big shots. It's like, no, we're all supposed to be missionaries.
Right.
We're just all supposed to be doing this. It's not, the whole family's supposed to be doing this.
That's right.
You know, the people, you know, it's like, this is the man of the cloth. And I was like, that's Tarzan. We're all, first of all, hopefully we're all clothed.
Yeah.
And we all have cloths.
Yeah. Everyone's a, if you're a believer, everyone's a minister because the highest form of a minister is a servant. He serves others.
So if you want to be the greatest person, then he's just to be the servant of all.
That's right.
You think about that. And so you know, what I look at is I look at Abraham, the father of faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we serve the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Abraham heard the Lord and he just responded to what God said. And God just said, get up and go and I'll show you. And he went. That was a 25-year journey. And God began to just, you know, show himself to Abraham. It was an amazing thing because God taught him. The word of God says the angels have come down to be able to look at the cities, two cities called Sodom and Gomorrah. And the angels talk about, hey, you know, we've taught him. We should tell him what's going on.
Hmm.
Isn't that amazing? And one of the verses talk about, you know, we've already, you know, he's already been taught about this. We probably should let them know why we're here, you know? And so they tell him, say, listen, there's this city. It's, we, you know, God's getting word of the city that it's going to have a lot of sins. By the way, there's more than one sin going on Sodom and Gomorrah. There was gluttony and greed and idolatry and just narcissism and every kind of sexual sin you can imagine. It was just total fleshed out, you know? And the word was that, It's so full, it's just got to destroy it. And so they were going to go check it out. And so they share with Abraham, hey, this is the report. This is the report. We're going to go check it out. Just wanted you to know this. And God will often do this. And right now you're looking at America. You're looking at Iraq. You're looking at, you know, when you think about Iraq, this northern city called Mosul, that city is Nineveh, by the way. That's Nineveh. And God sent Jonah to Nineveh. So when you hear Mosul, think about this. ISIS headquarters is in Nineveh. And Jonah was a lot like a lot of folks today. They're saying like, you know, they don't, you know, they just destroy that city, you know. And God's going, no, I love the Arab people in Mosul. I love Miriam, who's in that camp for 4 months. I love the people there.
Mm.
And Jonah's going, it's ISIS. You know, they don't deserve him. They're saying, I mean, you think about it, it's today's argument. And he was running from God. He's going like, I don't want to go preach the gospel to them. You know, gospel. I don't want to go tell them about your goodness that you want to forgive them. I don't want them forgiven. And that's what he was saying. I don't want them forgiven. This is the story about Jonah and the well. Hello. And that's Nineveh. Mosul is Nineveh, the headquarters of ISIS. And the city was so bad. Nineveh was so bad at that time that God was going to totally destroy it. So it is as bad as it is now or way worse, maybe. I don't know, because God hadn't destroyed the city yet. And the prince of Nineveh has been killed, by the way, in this last month or so. That should be a huge sound to all of us to realize. Right. And Jonah just had an attitude. I don't want to go. I don't want to go. I don't want to go. And finally, it came to a point when he got on this ship and he was taking off saying, you know, I've got this job now. I forgot about that call on my life, you know, and I'm busy making money, doing my thing and all this kind of stuff. He's on this boat and the storm gets so bad. It gets so bad that the people who didn't want to do this, they did not want, they, it wasn't in them to take the church out of America and make the church preach to America. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't in them to take Jonah and throw them out of the boat. Because Jonah said, it's me. You know, I didn't stand for Israel. I didn't walk before God. It's not you. Because he told me, he said, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and turn from their wicked ways, then God would heal America. But I didn't turn, you know. And it's like, throw me out of the country, you know, throw me off the boat. And it wasn't in them to do it. But it got so bad that God says, you know, God touched these guys on these boats and says, like, chunk them. And they threw the church in the water. They threw the answer in the water. They threw the Jewish minister in the storm. Threw him right in the middle of the storm. And I'm sure he's probably like splashing around going like, ah, as long as I'm not in Nineveh, I'm fine with that. It's crazy. They're cutting off heads. They're, you know, it's crazy over there right now. And then a whale swallows him. And while he was in the belly of all the consequences of the storm that was raised up, guess what? He says, you know, I was thinking about going to Mosul and telling them that God loves you and God's got a plan for you. I want to go to Nineveh. That's what happened.
Yeah.
And God, we all just goes, spits him out on the beach or whatever. And he goes to Nineveh. He preaches it. God extends the time for the judgment that was coming to Nineveh, to Mosul, if you would. And so he could get and cover the whole city and preach to them. This is how God works. You got to tell people about God. You got to tell them that he loves them. And they all heard this evil city, bent for destruction, all heard. And when they all heard, they repented. God relented. He said, never mind, I'm not going to destroy this city. And they lived a righteous city, a right city for 40 years. Nineveh, Mosul did that. Listen, church, do we want them to throw us out of this nation into the storm so we'll wake up and do what we're supposed to do, or do we want to just do it right now, right?
That's right.
We're all called to go into all the world and preach the gospel.
I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so glad that you've joined us. Don't forget you can join us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Download our app and sign up for our newsletter, The Torch,
at vfnkb.com.
I've enjoyed our time together. God bless.